The novelist Richard Russo heard a story once. True or not, it was a tale of a cop who discovered something strange in his wife's belongings, a garage door opener.
And so he actually went around town. People saw him going up one street and down the other, pointing this garage door remote at various garages, having concluded that if he could find the house where the garage door went up, he would have found his wife's lover.
Richard Russo built a novel on this tale. Everybody's Fool centers on a middle-aged man with questions about his late wife, indeed, about his whole life. It's a sequel to Nobody's Fool, which became a movie in the 90s starring Paul Newman and Philip Seymour Hoffman. They're blue-collar guys in a blue-collar town, an old city in upstate New York that used to have mills and factories, used to be something. This is Richard Russo's world, the kind of place he grew up. The main character in the novel reflects he was a C student, which gives him a certain local prominence since the A students long ago left town. Russo did get out of town, but still relates to the people he left behind.
Rather like their author, I suppose, they have reached a point in life where they are looking ahead at an uncertain future, but more importantly, looking backwards and trying to, I don't know, figure out what the shape is in the carpet, the figure in the carpet. What is all of this added up to?
The figure in the carpet. He's referring there to an old short story whose meaning has always been mysterious. Richard Russo's main character attends a funeral in a local cemetery where he is coming to know more and more of the people buried there.
The soil beneath where so many people lay interred has begun to erode. And so when you go to visit grandma and you stand before her headstone, you have no guarantee anymore that grandma's still there. She may have moved down the slope a ways. So the dead in this book are on the move, which is another way of suggesting, of course, that they are not fixed in there any more than they're fixed in our memories. They have more to say to us when they're gone, if we're the sort to listen.
Do you have the whole geography of this fictional town in your head?
I kind of do, yeah. I know with all of my books, if Miles Roby walks out of the diner in Empire Falls and goes to visit Mrs. Whiting, I know whether he has to turn right or left, and I can feel Sully's knee throb when he walks from, you know, Hattie's in the morning down to the OTB. I have a pretty good sense of the geography of my places.
When you talked with us about 8 years ago, you said that you don't actually write about place, even though there's such a powerful sense of place in your books, that you're really writing about class. And I'm thinking about that now because class is so much more on people's minds now than I think it maybe was a number of years ago. What has made you think about class so intensely all these years?
I suspect it's because my own life has changed so dramatically in ways that I never would have predicted. Coming from a small mill town in upstate New York, from parents and grandparents who didn't think of themselves as poor but didn't have any money, I find myself now at 66 having lived the American dream to a point at which I think would have completely mystified my maternal grandfather. Were he to be standing here now on the other side of the glass of the studio that I'm talking to you in and see where I am, the life that I'm living, which is, of course, the life that he would have dreamed for me had he been that ambitious a dreamer, is pretty astonishing.
I feel like you're saying something important about your grandfather that probably applies to a lot of us. You're saying that he could not have imagined going much beyond the station in life that he had been born into, or could not have imagined you going much beyond that station in life.
Well, you know, he and
not
and
that
my
he was
mother,
against it, just he couldn't picture it.
No. That's right. Imagination, you don't spring from the air into the air. You spring from the ground into the air. And that ground that I sprang from is in Gloversville, New York. And it would have seemed like arrogance, I think, to my grandfather to assume that he was ever going to be living a hugely different life from the life that he lived from the time that he was a boy and then a young man.
So I want you to read something, if you wouldn't mind.
Sure.
And it's about one of your main characters, Sully, who is at a point in his life where after this really vigorous blue-collar existence, he's come into some money various ways, and he's comfortable. He doesn't have to work anymore.
Okay. What all this amounted to, in Sully's estimation, was a cosmic joke. As a poor man, he had always suspected that life's deck was stacked in favor of those with means. Was it possible, without intending to, he'd actually become one of them? Was he now and forevermore insulated against adversity? How exactly should he feel about that? Other people rose to the challenge and learned how to live with good fortune. Why not him?
I love that. And listening to you, I wonder if that is sometimes you being uncomfortable with your own good fortune.
No, it's always me, not sometimes. There was absolutely no imagination involved at all in writing that paragraph. That's just, I wake up in the morning and something like that thought every time. Yeah, how did this happen?
So I have to ask, because we're in the middle of this election where class issues have come to the fore in so many different ways. If your characters, and granted this is a novel set in the 90s, but if your characters were around today, how do you think they'd be voting this year?
Well, I'd like to give you a different answer, but I think it's pretty clear that so many of the people that I know and love and have been writing about for a long time, alas, have lined up with Mr. Trump.
You don't seem very happy about that.
Happy? I'm heartbroken.
Why do you think it is?
Well, I think America's changing. It's changing before their eyes. And I think that a lot of the angry white men who support Donald Trump have a belief that America has passed them by and that people who don't look like them are getting ahead in the new America. And I think they all understand in some ways that Donald Trump is speaking in a less coded way than some others in the Republican Party, but he's saying, make America white again, not make America great again. And I think, unfortunately, working class people have bought that. And that's why my heart is broken.
Richard Russo's new novel is called Everybody's Fool. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Steve.